Welcome into another edition of Patriots Draft Countdown presented by Bud Light. Bud Light, easy to drink, easy to enjoy, the official beer sponsor of the New England Patriots. And Evan, we're here, day three of the combine. We're still grinding through these guys. We saw the safeties, the cornerbacks, and finally we got to the offense, the tight ends. This is a long podcast version here. We're going to break all these guys down, really go into depth here. Let's start at the top, though, with the biggest need, which is, of course, tight end. I mean, the Patriots don't really have anybody on the roster officially right now that played last year. I think we'd both maybe make the argument, Hunter Henry, there's not a lot of options out there in free agency. Resign him. He's been a great contributor.
Yeah.
Bring him back and at least establish a baseline. But we saw these guys here today, not a big class, only two groups of tight ends, not like last year's class, which just seemed absolutely loaded. What stood out to you overall, just starting at the top from this tight end class?
Well, that was the first thing, and not to crap all over this class or anything like that, but it was just the sheer volume or lack thereof in this tight end group. I mean, we only had two groups go up to the podium today, and just looking at it on your sheet, you can tell it's just a small,
we got 18 guys maybe?
It just... It's a smaller group. There's not a ton of depth in this class. There's really two prizes, I would say. Brock Bowers is in a tier of his own. He's number one. I do want to talk a little bit about our thoughts on Brock Bowers and how it makes sense, doesn't make sense for them. But I think when you start to get into the other guys, you're looking at guys that are more just have specific roles that they might fill versus guys that are going to come in and be high impact, three down, type of players. I think the only other tight end that I would put in that high impact category is probably Jatavion Sanders from Texas. But then you get into the Ben Sidditts and the Theo Johnsons and the Cade Stovers, and I think those guys are going to have roles on NFL teams, but they might not be a day one impact starter type of player at the position.
Yeah, don't forget Jared Wiley from TCU, one of our favorites as well. But let me ask you this, Evan. I mean, we talk a little bit about trading down. Is that really an option? Not really. It doesn't really seem like it at this point. But if they were to trade down, and we talk so much about they need to weaponize the offense, is somebody like Brock Bowers, does that count? Does that count as weaponizing? Because I'm sure, I'd say Rob Gronkowski, he sure was a weapon.
Right.
Not to make that comparison.
Right.
But it seems like that maybe would make sense if they were to trade down and he's kind of sitting there in the 12, 13 range, something in there, maybe a little higher.
Yeah, so when I watch Brock Bowers on film, I see a lot of George Kittle. Mm. And someone that can block, that can catch the ball, that can create after the catch and stretch the field vertically with his speed. He's a very fast tight end. He's someone I think could time in the 4.5s in the 40-yard dash. I don't know if he's running, but if he does run, I think he's going to time very, very, very well. So he's got vertical speed. He's got yak ability. He's got blocking ability. Maybe not the true hand in the dirt Rob Gronkowski. This is an extra tackle type of blocking. But if you get him on an island into space with a DB, with a linebacker, and just ask him to seal, he's a extremely effective at that. So in a lot of respects, all the things that I just said, it opens up a lot for your offense because he's basically a receiver, but he also can block. So he's got that flexibility to be in line, detached. That's a very scheme versatile and a very dynamic player. But I think for the Patriots, you have to ask yourself, how much does that necessarily move the needle and how much is it going to really make that day one impact? So I just don't necessarily see the path for Brock Bowers with New England, but there are teams in the top 10. The Chargers, I think, look like a great fit for him. There's someone that could really come in and make a huge impact.
You talk about Alex Van Pelt and the offense that he ran in Cleveland, and we know he's been a lot of different places. So he's it's not necessarily going to be exactly what it was in Cleveland, but how do you feel between taking a developmental Y tight end, somebody who you're hoping can get strong enough to really handle it all? Maybe not. Sometimes those guys are hard because they're not always the most explosive. But then there's always guys that are just a typical F. And look, we're not going to ask you to block. We're going to go back to Gronk and Hernandez. It was kind of like the perfect pairing with Hernandez and his ability to get open. So, just philosophically, how do you feel about, you might not get Brock Bowers, who's going to be hopefully that prototypical Y tight end, but maybe you can take an F on day two or three who can come in. We're not going to ask too much of you, but you can come in and contribute to this offense and make some plays.
That's the way I look at Jatavion Sanders as of right now. I don't think that you're doing him a little bit of a disservice by asking him to put his hand in the dirt and kick out a nine technique, right? Yeah. Like, this is not really going to be his game. But at the same time, if you get that player into space, if you get that player down the field, he's going to create chunk play after chunk play after chunk play. And that's exactly what he did at Texas. Looking at that Texas offense, they have Xavier Worthy on the outside. They have A.D. Mitchell on the other side. And there was all this space in the middle of the field. And Jatavion Sanders consistently made defenses pay for overloading the outside guys. And I think that that's somebody that could fit really well into this Alex Van Pelt offense. as much as you think about they want to run the ball, they want to be a run-first offense, I think there's so much misdirection to their run game, and there's so much variety to the way that they run the ball, that it's not necessarily that you need to have that Gronkowski blocking tight end. Yeah. I think that there are that ability to, all right, we're going to run wide zone, and he's going to then bootleg off of it. So you can't, you know, overcommit to the run, and that helps them block a little bit. Like, it's not as much of that, we're just coming right at you, and we need a guy that's going to be able to block that way. So I don't think it's necessarily a top priority for that tight end to be a big blocker.
Yeah, so tight end, clearly big position to need, and really they could go any which direction. You don't really have any guys on the roster who played last year, like I said, so they've got to make some additions in there. Free agency, the draft, not a great class. Wish they grabbed some last year. What are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, like, you look at free agency, right? Yeah. And I do think there are some guys, like, you know, obviously Dalton Schultz is probably going to be the top tight end. But even, like, a guy like Gerald Everett, I think, is interesting just because of his ability to create after the catch. And they're going to run a lot, like I just said, of bootleg, misdirection, things like that. If they're going to be a lot of that, which is what AVP's been in the past, then just getting guys that can sneak into the flats and then take a ball, you know, that's a little check down and turn it into a 20-yard gain. Like, those are the types of things that you look at.
Like we saw from Farrell Brown, who was another guy that, you know, I bring him back. Like a big, you know, NFL veteran that can block. I'm all for that. So they got work to do there. Let's switch over to cornerback, though. And this is, you know, an interesting position. Christian Gonzalez, outstanding. And what did he play? 3 games and change. I mean, AFC Rookie of the Month there in September. I mean, just a huge disappointing moment when he went down in Dallas. And really, you know, he didn't get the chance to develop. We've seen some video, though. You know, we always get these videos on Instagram. Yeah. He's rehabbing. He's working out, folks. Yeah. He's going to be okay. Jonathan Jones, I thought, had a great year. He battled through injuries, you know, maybe has some struggles at times. But I still think that Jonathan Jones has that ability to be a base down outside corner. He's going to slide inside maybe and take, you know, some of the more shifty guys on pure passing downs. But, you know, with Jack Jones gone now, Marcus Jones coming back, we haven't really seen him perform as, you know, a slot. I think he's a good, like, fourth corner, you know, a second slot. Like, when you need a specific kind of guy to cover a short person, I think Marcus Jones could be that guy still. I still have some hope with him. But
heightist.
A little bit. Well, you know, we saw a little bit against the Raiders a couple years ago, you know. But it is what it is. He's got great quickness, though. And I think, you know, honestly, I mean, going back to when he came out, I was always just super impressed with how sticky he was.
Yeah.
Like, he was really good in coverage. But enough about the guys already on the roster. Today we saw a bunch of cornerbacks. And again, you know, there's some top-ranked guys that we probably aren't going to see in Patriots uniforms. They got that first-round pick last year. But, you know, Cooper DeJean, we talked about him a little bit on the debrief, but just kind of an ideal Patriots fit if it were ever to fall that way. I don't know if I'm putting him number one on the big board this year like we did last year with Gonzalez. But he has some talent. The kids from Alabama, too, those two guys, both really talented guys as well.
Yeah, look, I mean, there's not a ton of consensus right now, I would say, with the number one corner in this class. There isn't one of those, you know, prize number, you know, top corners that's going to go in the top five, top ten picks most likely. I was really impressed by Quinyon Mitchell from Toledo at the Senior Bowl. Mm-hmm. I think he's somebody that solidified himself as a day one first round prospect down in Mobile. You mentioned the two Alabama guys. Yeah. Those guys are definitely in the conversation as well, but Cooper DeJean's one of those players that old regime probably all over Cooper DeJean, like, can play every single spot in the back end. You can play him at safety, you can play him at nickel, you can play him at outside corner, and he can really just do just about everything. And then he can also play in the kicking game, so that's a Belichick pick, you know, through and through. So I don't know if necessarily they're going to go in that direction, but looking at outside corner in general, I think is a need. Having that third guy that can rotate in. The league nowadays is so 11 personnel heavy. Everything's three wide receiver, especially on third down. And you need to be able to play man-to-man coverage on third down against three receivers that can all play. And in order to do that, the Patriots are going to have to look at that third cornerback spot. You're going to have Christian Gonzalez. You're going to have Jonathan Jones. But is it like, you know, the depth chart you just went over? So there's a couple guys that I thought stood out today and stood out in Mobile as well. A guy like Cam Hart from Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Is someone that I've looked at a lot, you know, physical outside corner, can play press man, can play in a Patriots style system. So I think that's the biggest thing, though, for this group is finding a third rotational guy. Probably not going to play every down, maybe more like 60% of the snaps. But we always like to call it on Catch 22 the Jason McCourty role.
Totally.
Like,
is that perfect?
Who's just that?
Right. You want a little safety,
DB,
you want a slot,
that
third
can
guy.
Just play on third down and be a critical piece.
Yeah, what do you mean? Talk about Patriots fits. One guy, Max Melton from Rutgers, 4 block punts. He was really trumpeting that at his podium session, as he should be. Mad Max, but again, another guy kind of trumpeting his versatility, like DeGene, the ability to play number of spots. And I think you heard us talk earlier about how kind of complicated it is, how it kind of could all fit together. But when you look at a guy with just a lot of versatility, it's just that's perfect because somebody goes down, somebody gets hurt.
Yeah.
You have the ability to fill in a number of different spots. So that was, you know, one guy that just kind of stood out to me today.
Yeah, I think that in general with this secondary, I just would look for a little bit more size personally still. Like, look, Gonzo's great, and he's going to be a number one corner. But Jonathan Jones, Marcus Jones, maybe Alex Austin's the guy that you bring in that has the size still that's still around. Yeah. But I really trusting Alex Austin to be a guy that's going to play a significant role in this defense. And obviously you have Miles Bryant, too, is another smaller guy. So I still think that they could use some length and size on the outside.
Yeah, I mean, the other part, too, I mean, I'm thinking of Juwan Williams. And, of course, you know, didn't work out. But, you know, again, just a big corner that – you know, they've been such a matchup team in the past. And, you know, from what we've heard from DeMarcus Covington, it sounds like a lot of the elements from the defense will remain. But I think we're expecting there to be some evolution to this defense.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to be exactly what it was. I mean, even when they changed under defensive coordinators, when, you know, we famously went from Matt Patricia to Brian Flores, and all of a sudden it's like zero blitzes coming at you left and right. Even into Steve Belichick and Gerard, what they've kind of done and kind of maintained some of that aggression. I know, you know, we talked a lot about Steve and when to call the zero blitzes and those things.
Yeah.
Washington will have fun with that aggressive defense run under Steve. But I do wonder, like, you know, do they need a bigger matchup piece? And, you know, you mentioned Austin, and I'm like, was he, like, even he seems still a little bit frail.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest question is, you know Gonzo, and you hope Gonzo is going to be that guy that's, you know, when they play the Jets, it's going to be Garrett Wilson. When they play the Dolphins, it's going to be Tyreek Hill. When they play the Bills, it's going to be Stephon Diggs. But who is going to be that second outside corner? Because ideally, I think a guy like Jonathan Jones is someone that can travel around, that whether it's, you know, a shifty slot receiver, a speed slot receiver, you just kind of move him around and allow him to basically put out fires and not necessarily pigeonhole him to one spot. Like, I feel like he's almost defaulted to the last couple of years because of injuries and lack of depth at that spot. You mentioned scheme changes and things like that. You know, DeMarcus Covington and Gerard Mayo are both front seven guys, defensive line coach, linebacker. Usually when you get guys like that that are running your defense, it becomes more aggressive. Like, you're coming after the quarterback.
It.
You start scheming up the pressures, you know, scheming up different looks in the pressure game, scheme pressures, creepers, things like that, and you just start coming after the quarterback because that's what their background is in. But the league, in a lot of ways, is starting to trend towards a lot more split safety coverage, and we've discussed this before, the Fangio influence of, you know, quarters and pomp and things like that. Is that a way that they end up going? Because this college game, and we're going to talk about the safeties here, I'm sure, in a second, the college game is, they don't play any post safety anymore in college. And if they do, it's like Rip Liz type stuff where they're rotating post snap into post safety. So they don't play a ton of single high coverage. So finding those single high center fielders like the Devin McCourties is harder and harder and harder. So in a lot of ways, it's supply and demand. Like, you can't just force guys into those roles. And I think last year they figured it out as the year kind of progressed. But Kyle Duggar, Jabril Peppers, kind of playing out of position a little bit, playing up top. So is that a spot that they look at to a Cam Kitchens or someone like that that can play that role? Or do they look to change it a little bit how they do things in the back end?
Yeah, so Evan led us right into it. We're right on to safeties. There we go. You know, but I wonder, too, like, and this is a little bit, you know, out of the frame of what we're talking about right now, but, you know, do you think that maybe as we go forward with the model as you just laid out that transitioning cornerbacks, maybe more zone cornerbacks who, you know, don't really fit your man scheme, but if you're playing them on the back end, you're not as worried about them matching, mirroring guys in coverage, that kind of thing. I just wonder if that's maybe something to watch for, starting to take zone corners and moving them to free safety. I don't know. I'm spitballing here, you know.
Well, it's one thing, too. I think we talked to DeMarcus Covington a couple weeks ago. I can't even remember how long ago that was. I'm, like, delirious about that.
It is leap day, of course.
Yeah, it was some time ago. And he talked about turnovers. And the one thing that you could hold against the defense last year, as good as they played, is they didn't turn the ball over a ton.
Yep.
And I look at that, and you think about Gonzalez. Great man-to-man mirror match corner. He's going to go and shadow a number one receiver, and he's going to be able to carry him all over the field, which is great, but he's not necessarily a ball hawk, which is not a bad thing. It's just not his game. So maybe looking at that other cornerback spot free safety as spots that you can get turnover producers, you know, guys that can range over the top and have those types of interceptions, or an outside corner that maybe is a little bit more of like a zone match type of corner that will jump routes and create interceptions. I think in theory you're thinking about a guy like J.C. Jackson, but more in his prime, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's something as terms of pairing with Gonzalez. I don't know if you necessarily want to pair Gonzalez with another guy that's going to just mirror and match guys all over the field. You might want a little bit more of a risk taker on the other side because you know you're going to have the steady Eddie on the other side.
It's a good point. And so sticking with safeties, I mean, one guy I wanted to bring up just from Georgia, I think we're both a little bit impressed with him, Javon Bullard. Just good personality. Just seems like, you know, he really has.
Man.
He has kind of a spark to him. I mean, sometimes we've been doing this for a few years now, and there are certain guys, and I don't know if Javon Bullard's going to work out. I mean, I know his game has some flaws in it, but he just kind of projects the feeling of having been in NFL locker rooms now for a full year or for a few years. He kind of projects that this guy can play in the NFL. It just feels like.
And you just talked to so many of these guys that are from Alabama, Georgia, Texas, like these big time programs.
TCU.
And they're just ready. They're ready to play in the league, and it's almost like they've been playing in de facto like minor league NFL this entire time. It's a little bit of step above regular college football, where the media attention, all the things that go into it, the way their coaches run their programs, it's so similar to an NFL structure that they almost feel just a little bit more ready for this moment. I thought that was kind of what I took away from Bullard, who is a little bit undersized in terms of his length and his height. He's more of like a blocky, probably going to be like a nickel or a box safety, can play a little bit of split safety zone as well, but not that true center fielder. I'm telling you, the true center fielder in this class is Cam Kitchens from Miami. If that's the way that they want to go at 34, I think he's going to be a late first, early second type of guy. If they truly feel like they need that role and they need to fill Devin McCourty's shoes with a guy that can translate and do those types of things, then he's the guy. But in general, I just, again, you go through the group and it's just so many of it is just the same. This guy's like a Kyle Duggar type.
Yeah.
This guy's like a Kyle Duggar type.
Kyle
that
Duggar
guy's
types.
A Jabril Peppers type. And it's just all these kind of box safety hybrids.
Yeah, I like me those Jabril Peppers types.
Yeah.
So we had a chance to talk to Matt Miller from ESPN, who he's been around forever. He's been working his way up. He goes way back to the Bleacher Report days with me. I mean, he has just been on the draft for over a decade now. So I had a great conversation with him. He even expanded a little bit. You had a chance to ask him about this safety spot as well. His impression of the quarterbacks, he's very high on the wide receivers. So check out this interview right now we had with Matt Miller from ESPN. All right, we're excited to be joined now by Matt Miller from ESPN. Matt, thanks for joining us here at the Combine.
Yeah, of course. I don't think I've ever done Patriots media at the Combine.
Oh, really?
I mean, normally, you guys are like coming fresh off a Super Bowl win. You're not even talking about the draft yet. So I think this might be a first.
Well, you might have heard we're third overall pick, so we've got plenty to talk about.
Yeah. It's a little different now.
Yeah.
So saw your most recent mock draft. You've got Jaden Daniels going to the Patriots.
Yeah.
Just tell us a little bit about that pick and what you see the fit there with Jaden.
Yeah, Jaden is a fantastic player. I think if there were an award for most improved player in college football, he would have taken that one home, as well as the Heisman for being the best player in college football. You know, the running ability is notable. Over 1,200 yards the last 2 years each in the SEC. It's not easy to do. But it's also the pocket passing. It's the downfield passing. You know, my favorite stat on him, on throws over 20 yards, he had a QBR of 99.5. It's really, really hard to do. He had 22 touchdowns, zero interceptions on deep passing. So if he's there at 3 overall, not sure that he will be. As of today, that mock draft's a couple weeks old. He is a dynamic player that I think is that type of quarterback that could put a team on him early, just like LSU did this past year. And he's able to elevate what's around him.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you just with Jaden Daniels, it seems like there is some steam, at least in the media, about him going 2 overall to the Commanders. And I think that makes a lot of sense with Cliff Kingsbury there. So how do you see that now shaking out now that you've been here for a few days too?
Yeah, I think the Cliff Kingsbury hire in Washington was when my mind kind of changed as well of, looking at what, he put his job on the line to get Kyler Murray in Arizona.
Right.
Jaden has a lot of the same qualities. I would argue is maybe a better runner and is a better passer. So that definitely makes that kind of an interesting fit. That's what happens. You think you have an idea of where guys are going to go, and then a hire happens. And you're like, then Jim Harbaugh goes to the Chargers. And you're like, wait, that ruined my mock draft. So why couldn't you guys have done this earlier? But there definitely seems to be that's the way the wind is kind of blowing right now. The next few days are still very, very important to that process. Jaden is not throwing here, so there's not that opportunity like a C.J. Stroud or Anthony Richardson last year where they came and they put a stamp on their draft stock last year with their workouts.
Yeah.
We're not going to see that. So it might delay things out at least until the middle of March when we get the LSU Pro Day.
Yeah, and with Drake May, it just seems like he's become one of the more volatile prospects, honestly, in this draft. You either have a lot of people that think that he's, you know, got a lot of warts, and then there's a lot of people that look at him and see Justin Herbert, Josh Allen. Where do you kind of fall on that scale?
You know, so I would say people have forgotten that Josh Allen and Justin Herbert had a lot of warts coming out, and they've turned into who they are. You know, I was the biggest Josh Allen fan in the world when he came out of Wyoming. He'd had a terrible year at Wyoming that year. And a lot of people were like, oh, I don't see it with him. Same with Justin Herbert. It was, oh, he doesn't have the personality to lead a team, or he doesn't ever run and leave the pocket. Obviously, now we see him as a really accomplished runner in the NFL. So I think for Drake, it's a similar situation where he's drafted is going to matter a lot. You want to have a good infrastructure in place for him because he is a young quarterback. He's 22 years old. He only started for 2 years in college and had two different offensive coordinators. So he hasn't had a chance to really settle in, learn and build that consistency. So wherever he goes, whether it be Washington at 2, New England at 3, or someone after that, he needs to have a good setup, which almost every quarterback does. That doesn't make him unique, but I think that's where you're seeing some of the polarization of, man, I really like the tools. There are times he does things and I'm scratching my head. And a lot of it just goes back to coaching, and you hope that you can fix that once he gets to the NFL.
Yeah, and you look at with Drake too, there's a lot of helmet scouting, I feel like, going on.
Absolutely.
With him, where it's Mitchell Trubisky, Sam Howell, you know, those types of players. Nothing against those guys, but how different would you say to Trubisky in particular, just being a high draft pick himself, is Drake May at this point?
Yeah, the funny thing, Mitch was like the most conservative quarterback prospect maybe ever. You know, if it wasn't there, he didn't take it. And Drake is the opposite. He will take things that aren't there. You know, he will make throws that you don't want him to, which is where you get some of the Josh Allen comp stuff. He tries to put everything on himself, and there's some hero ball at times. And there are times, you know, there's a free blitzer coming in his face, and he's going to eat that tackle to make a throw that he shouldn't make. And so very different from Trubisky, who was ultra conservative and quite a bit bigger and more athletic than Sam Howell was. And also, you know, Sam Howell, we saw that drop off when he didn't have the star wide receivers around and the star running backs around him. We saw a big drop off. Drake this past year doesn't have Josh Downs, new offensive coordinator. Production-wise, there wasn't as much of a drop-off. It was just more so in some of the decision-making.
Yeah, I feel like I feel like the Trubisky stuff is just so wild to me that people make that comparison.
Yeah. I don't know what we call this website anymore, but my Twitter bio has a line that says, scout the player, not the helmet.
Yeah.
Because that's my biggest pet peeve of, like, you know, imagine if you looked at every Michigan quarterback ever and was like, these guys never work out. Nah, we're not going to take a flyer on a Tom Brady. Or LSU quarterbacks before Joe Burrow. Ohio State quarterbacks before CJ Stroud. So it's a risky game to do that. And it's just, you know, it's a little lazy.
Yeah.
I'm sure you guys could talk quarterbacks all day. We got to talk some wide receivers. You know, Elliot Wolf earlier this week said the Patriots have to weaponize their offense. I think we can all agree that this offense needs to take the next step. I know you're high on the wide receivers in this class, of course, at the top. First of all, is there an argument to be made for the Patriots to take one of those guys at the top? If not, how do you kind of see that playing out later? Where could they get another guy?
There's
like that?
Absolutely an argument to be made for that. I think if you just look at who are the best players in the class, you can make an argument for Marvin Harrison Jr. as the best player in the class. Same for Malik Nabers, the wide receiver at LSU. It's funny, I have Caleb Williams 1. I have Harrison 2, Adunze 4, Nabers 3, Adunze 4. So I have them all like right there together, and all with like this big crazy grade because they're all so specialist talents. So I do think, and you know, to carry on the quarterback conversation, if they are not convicted all the way on one of the quarterbacks, this is the year where you should just not take one. You should take, because there are superstar wide receivers. There's a left tackle in Joe Alt, who is a franchise caliber. Plug him in for 12 years and don't worry about the position ever again. And I think offensively the Patriots roster is in such a shape that don't force it this year. If you don't love the quarterback who's there at 3, you could also trade back, get some draft capital, which is needed to weaponize this offense, and you could walk out with one of the top 3 receivers or the top left tackle in the draft, which all of those are equal needs. Obviously quarterback, it takes precedent because of the positional value, but you have needs at all your core offensive spots right now.
Yeah. Any favorites for you, wide receiver position, day 2, like, you know, those later rounds?
Yeah, so I love wide receivers. That's where I get in trouble because I like them all. Adonai Mitchell from Texas, if he doesn't go in the first round, it will be a travesty. But I look at my colleagues' mock drafts, and he's there in round 2, and I'm like, guys, what are we doing? Like, watch him play. He's got to be a first-round pick. Ladd McConkey from Georgia is another one where I use this line all the time, but if we could just watch guys play football and forget that we're scouting for the draft for a while, Ladd McConkey would be one of your favorite players to watch because he's just – he's a technician. He's tough. He never drops the ball. So quick in and out of everything he does. So it's – round two wide receivers are really, really talented this year. And, you know, it used to be when I was back at Bleacher Report, we talked about, oh, round two is when you get your receivers because of A.J. Brown, because of, you know, Michael Thomas and all those great – round two wide receivers. Now it's become a premium position, but you can still get exceptional value after pick 32.
Yeah, I'd be pretty surprised. A.D. Mitchell seems like a guy that's back into the first round guy, and I am surprised every time I see him sneak into that 34 range for the Patriots. But you mentioned Ladd McConkey, and I also wanted to ask you when you transitioned to tackles to Marius Mims as well, both Georgia guys. Both those guys had injuries, haven't played a ton, haven't had a ton of production. How do you view that as a scout, as an analyst, when guys have such a small sample size to work with?
Yeah, it's really hard. And with Mims especially, he only started 8 games in college. He had to wait his turn for Broderick Jones. Started a little bit in 2022, finally gets to start this year, then gets the tightrope ankle surgery, so he has to shut down for a little while. With Mims, what I like is those 8 games might be the best 8 games any tackle in this class has played.
I like that, yeah.
So it's, you see the upside. That's what makes my job easier. And I think for NFL coaches and scouts, it's, okay, we've seen him do this, especially in the SEC. You know, to see you do this out of Georgia and have that dominance for 8 games, we know we can get that from you consistently. It's not so much the highs and lows. You know, sometimes you see guys become draft bust. It's the highs and lows in a limited amount of time. With those two, it was – especially with McConkey. I mean, it was dominance every time he was on the field, especially when he was on the field and healthy. It was dominance.
Yeah, that Florida game for him was just outrageous.
And
I mean, the route running
for him
is crazy.
To battle to come back in the SEC championship game and know he's not 100% told me so much about just who he is as a player and how much he loves his teammates and his coaches to get out there and, you know, hobbling through the game. You think, like, at one point it's like, oh, he's done for the game. Nope, here he comes right back in. So his toughness is infectious.
So I want to ask you about Joe Alt, because I feel like we haven't talked enough about Joe Alt a little bit here. And I think the thing with him is that it's almost like a flavor thing with tackles. He's not a road grader. He's not necessarily the guy that has the heavy hands that's going to move people. But what really impressed me with him was his footwork and his ability to mirror guys in the pass rush is just exceptional.
No, he's a finished product. He really is. And some of that's Notre Dame. Some of that's because his dad was a Chiefs Hall of Famer at offensive tackle. But you're right. 6'8", 315, you think this guy's going to be a punisher.
Yeah.
It's not quite his game. He's a little bit more of a finesse player. But can you turn that on?
Yeah.
You know, we've seen guys come out of college who are road graders and they don't know how to throttle down, you know, and so if they're over aggressive, that causes them to be, you know, a subpar player. So I think with him, it's that, you know, are you still able to put guys on the ground? You know, are you still able to get those pancake blocks? Are you still able to dominate in the run game without being, you know, overly physical? I think he does do that very well. And what he does in pass pro, like you said, the footwork is, he looks like he's played in the NFL for 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, he's just a pro ready to go right away. Like I said, he's a 12-year starter. You plug him in and you don't worry about it anymore.
Yeah. Any depth on the tackle position, though? Patriots miss out at the top. I mean, they big need for them. They really have to replace both spots.
Yeah, so I don't think that there is this year because we're going to see a run. Like a guy like Amarius Mims probably still goes in the first round because of the upside. There are two good left tackles, Alt, Olufashanu. The other, like, 6 tackles I think could go in the first round are all right tackles. So it is a little bit interesting to where maybe someone slips through the cracks and is there at 34, but it's become such a premium position. And where this draft is strong, you know, quarterback, wide receiver, tackle, corner are all positions teams are usually falling all over themselves to get early. So I think we probably see a run in the 20s.
Yeah. Evan, you want to talk about defense, Evan?
Well, I mean, running in the 20s doesn't make me feel good because every time I do my mock draft because I'm an expert, right?
We all are. Yeah.
I look at 34 as, you know, quarterback at 3, tackle at 34. There's such depth in this receiver class that you can probably get a receiver at 68 that can still make an impact. But tackle at 34 is always tough because there isn't somebody that I really love at that spot.
Yeah. I think a lot of teams are feeling that same way, which is why there is that argument of, you know, there are so many clubs in the top 15 picks where you say, okay, they need a wide receiver and a tackle.
Yeah.
Well, take the tackle first and wait for the wide receiver. That's just smart drafting at this point, even though we love those 3 receivers at the top. You know, there are a lot of teams. The Chargers at 5 are another team a lot like New England where you have that argument of, okay, we need both. What do we do here? And that could be where we see a lot of trade activity as teams say, okay, well, we're split on this decision. Let's trade back and maybe someone will help us make the decision between the 2 players.
Yeah.
I just got to ask one about defense. Yep. Sorry, yep. Evan. I know. We're all focused on offense here. But just in terms of the edge position, kind of a sneaky need for the Patriots. Just overall, how do you kind of see that class, and what's the depth kind of like in day two, day three developmental
guys? Yeah, so there's not a guy you draft at three this year, obviously. But I think at 34, you could be looking at really good depth. And then around three, I think one cool thing about pass rushers is we're starting to see teams draft for a role. Instead of, let's draft this guy and we expect him to play all three downs and he's got to play 80% of our snaps. Now it's, you need at least three pass rushers and you would really like to have five or six. So you can draft guys who are maybe a little bit undersized, like a Chop Robinson from Penn State. I think he's definitely a play at 34 and can be that stand-up pass rusher with great speed. There's a ton of value in that. No, he's not going to be, you know, your first down right defensive end, you know, against 12 personnel. But when it's time to go get the quarterback, he can be that player.
I got one defensive question. All right. I got a defensive question. I'm an offensive guy, right? Like I just, especially last year, we don't need to watch that again. Yeah. So, anyways, one thing that I've thought about a lot is replacing Devin McCourty in the back end for this Patriots defense. Yeah. And I watched a lot of college football, and it's so much quarters heavy, split safety heavy, and it's hard to find that true single high center fielder. Who in this draft, is there anybody that can really play that post safety spot?
Yeah, absolutely. Kalen Bullock from USC is that guy who has that over the top range. He's been a ball hawk. Is he a great tackler? No, he's not. It's not because he doesn't want to. It's almost like he hasn't been taught how to be yet. So I think that's part of his game that could still be developing. But if I had to go with that almost center fielder type safety in this class, it would be him.
Got it.
Great. Well, then, Matt, thanks so much for joining us. Great stuff from Matt. Check out all his work on ESPN, all your mock drafts. When's the next one coming out?
I don't know. I think in 2 weeks.
I'm surprised they don't have you do one every single day at this point.
I would do one every day is the problem. But we have this guy named Mel Kiper Jr. So takes priority on the mock drafts. Yeah.
Awesome stuff, Matt. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, big thanks to Matt for coming on and discussing. I mean, he's got this big board. He's got everything covered, providing his, you know, sharing his knowledge with us. So it's always great to speak
great,
with those national guys.
Player comps, which I love to do. I know some fans hate him, but I love him. And he had the same exact player comp for Jaden Daniels and for Drake May that I did. Lamar, Justin Herbert. So I was like, we're on the same page.
Best friends forever. That's going to wrap it up for us here on Leap Day, day three of the combine. And Evan's really excited because guess what, folks? We're a full offense now. We're going quarterbacks. We're going running backs. We're going wide receivers tomorrow. Offensive line on Saturday. All huge needs for the Patriots. So we're excited to dump in. We'll have a debrief. We'll have another full podcast like this. We're looking forward to speaking with Field Yates of ESPN as well to get his perspective on this draft. So we hope you'll stick with us this whole time. Two more days to go here from the 2024 combine in Indy.